This podcast is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Listen to other great tech podcasts at www.techpodcasts.com.
This is Tech Webcast.
Computers.
Technology.
Gadgets.
And other geeky stuff.
It's on iTunes. It's awesome.
And it's from the future.
Follow us at twitter.com/techwebcast.
And
on
Facebook. And check techwebcast.info for info. Tech Webcast.
Turn on. Tune in. Drop on.
And welcome to episode 253 of the Tech Webcast Podcast, recorded on the 24th of August, 2013. Tech Webcast is recorded every Saturday and rebroadcast on Aussie Tech Heads on Thursday nights at 7 p.m. Please rate us on iTunes and like us on Facebook.com/TechWebcast. Your hosts today are Brad, myself, Jody, Steve, Jacob, and we have a couple of great guests, Mike Algin, and who's our other guest? Brad?
Craig White from EasyFlix.tv.
EasyFlix.tv, okay, cool. EasyFlix, yeah. And Craig, I believe, is going to be co-hosting, right?
Hey, Mike, will we? Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. How are you doing, Brad?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing great. The sun is shining. Well, it was shining. It's nighttime here, but it's a beautiful day in New Jersey.
Good stuff.
USA.
Good stuff. And got Steve back on. Hey, Steve.
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, what's the news with you, man?
I've just been really busy. I just barely had enough time to get stuff from my own show earlier, so
good stuff.
That's it.
You were actually talking about streaming radio or something before the show.
Streaming radio. Oh, yeah. I was talking about Pandora a little bit.
Oh, Pandora. Yeah, yeah. I use Spotify and Google Music for that sort of stuff. Yeah. All right. Also got Jacob on. Welcome back, Jacob.
Thank you very much, Brad. How are you doing?
I'm going fantastic. And you did the news story today. Well, you're going to be reading the news.
Yes, I will be.
And Andrew's not on today. He's out buying a wedding dress.
hopefully a nice pink one.
And I don't think he's going to fit in it either.
Let's not go there.
I think it's for his mom.
That's for his mom. Yeah, she's getting married in December.
I think he lost the bet.
I thought he was getting married. Okay.
He is married.
He's married. Yeah, he's married, but she's getting married in December.
That's wonderful.
So good on you, Bev, getting married in December. Also, we got Mike Algin on. Welcome, Mike, back.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
Good to have you on, mate. Also, we have Craig White on. Welcome, Craig.
G'day, how are you? It's good to be here.
Yep. And you're from, where are you from? Where are you from? EasyFlix.tv.
Access Digital Entertainment. Now, our new launch is EasyFlix.tv.
Yep, that's a good one. We're talking about that very shortly. That just launched on Tuesday, is that correct?
That is correct, yes.
Good stuff.
Awesome.
Awesome, yep. Okay, let's get into some news, Jake, and then we'll head over to Craig for a chat.
All righty. This story has an update, so I'll do. Okay, Facebook hacker awarded $1,100. Now it's $1,900 by crowdsource campaign for finding a vulnerability in Facebook.
That's great. What, you got a view on that story, Mike? Have you seen that story?
I have, yeah. It's really interesting. This is the guy who used the normal Facebook procedure for reporting bugs and problems, mm-hmm. was ignored. So the vulnerability in question enabled people to post on other people's walls. And since they ignored him, he went ahead and posted his bug on the wall of Mark Zuckerberg, the CEO of Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, so Facebook got pissed off about that and said that it violated their terms for submitting bugs. You're not supposed to test your bugs or do anything around bug discovery with real people's accounts. And so they didn't give him any money. So the money was actually raised and awarded by people other than Facebook.
Which really kind of violates their terms of service, right? I mean, isn't that part of their TOS that they do award when people find bugs?
Yes. But they have the clause that you can't test it on live real people's other people's profiles. So they did violate the term. The guy did violate the terms. But who cares? The guy's famous now and rich and famous, richer and more famous.
Yep.
They should hire him. Seriously.
They should. All right. What about you, Steve? What's your view on that story?
I've covered a couple of hackers that did something very similar before. I'm really against it because there's a correct channel that you're supposed to go through, and Facebook does have test accounts you can do this on. And in fact, recently I reported on one that hacked into Apple's developer site, causing them, Apple, to respond quickly and take the whole site down, that affected the developers that are trying to make money for themselves. And so I believe you shouldn't do this at all. You need to use the correct channels. You got to realize, too, is there's thousands of bugs submitted, and it takes time for people to go through all these bugs and verify them. So just go through the correct channels and then, wait. And then you can see if they respond within enough time. Don't wait a couple of weeks. Sometimes it takes more than that.
All right. Good stuff. What about you, Craig? What's your view on that?
It kind of reminds me to be more responsive to any customer feedback, I think, so that doesn't kind of get to the next level. So I think that's my key takeaway there.
Good stuff. Jacob?
Well, I'm happy that he got paid.
Yeah.
But I'm sad, but Facebook just kicked him to the curb.
All right. Next story, mate.
Okay. NSA used Prism to collect more than 200 million internet communications a year as of 2011.
All right. What's your view on that, Jody?
Well, I mean, there's a little bit more to the story about that. They used Prism as a tool to collect private electronic data from users from different services, including Gmail, Facebook, Outlook, and a lot of the stuff. It's interesting. I don't know if most people realize that your communications, regardless of whether you think they're private or not, nothing is private. And I think, there's some people who just kind of say, well, gee, like, that's not a big surprise. But others, felt that, if it's a private email, it's kind of a violation of your privacy. It's a pretty serious situation. I don't know that there's any cure for it. I don't know whether it is a huge surprise or not. I guess the extent to which they've collected information is the big surprise.
It seems to me that there's a lot of confusion about in the public mind about how to respond to the whole NSA thing. And there are multiple ways to go at it. It's basically the problem. The fundamental problem is that it's a sort of a balance of power issue within the United States government, where we have an agency that's operating outside the Constitution, and so it's a big political issue. So the way people respond tends to be kind of not quite the right way to respond. Like, people think, well, I'm going to start using all this encryption to keep them out. Well, the issue is not about keeping the NSA out of your stuff. The NSA isn't really, there are multiple people who just run organizations that run rampant through everybody's data. And of these organizations, the material reality is that the NSA's violation of this information is the least likely to harm the average user. That doesn't make it okay at all. It's the worst in terms of a government that is supposed to be accountable to elected representatives and the people. So it's a constitutional crisis as far as I'm concerned. But it's the least harmful in terms of who the hackers are. The other groups out there, the number one threat is the Chinese military and the Chinese government, because they're not there just to see if you have ties to terrorism. They actually want to harvest your data and steal it and use it against human rights advocates within China. They want to steal it and give it to Chinese companies to advantage them. So there's a heavy element of industrial espionage. There are also malicious hackers. There are Eastern European and other sort of criminal gangs that are looking to exploit people for different reasons, identity theft, and so on. So the response to the NSA for American citizens should be a political response. And for non-American citizens, it should be a kind of boycott the American companies that are being violated to punish, the NSA indirectly kind of response. But it's really, as we were saying earlier, it's, your stuff is not private. There are lots of people going through it. And, we just live in an era where hacking is now being applied to big data processing, and that's what's crazy. That's what's different, is that it can be harvested at scale and then run through these massive supercomputers.
Yeah, and then so many things can be interpreted from it. It really is kind of scary, but I think, Mike, you hit on a really good point, and that is the scary part of it has to do with complete and utter power. If you have the information and you control the information, then you have utter and complete power, and that's unfortunately what is happening. You're talking about an organization that can really basically pull information from anyone at any time. And whoever's in control is in control.
Well, scary. I'm thinking the average American, what they're worried about is, even though it's non-invasive now, I mean, how far are they going to go in the future? And that's what I think a lot of people are worried about. And not just that, it seems like they're trying to get other companies involved, trying to, allow them to, even though they can't get into certain systems, they're trying to get permission from Google and some other ones to gain access, and that's something else they're worried about too.
Yep. Yeah, and the other thing is that there's a scandal involving the Silicon Valley companies, because it turns out that the NSA is compensating companies, so they're actually paying Google, and these are allegations. But they're paying these companies for the costs of compliance with FISA and other regulations that command them to essentially cooperate with some of this stuff. Some of it requires a cooperation, some of it doesn't. The part that does, there are costs involved, and they're being paid. And so there's it's impossible to determine. Well, first of all, everybody's lying about this. The president is lying. The NSA guys before Congress are lying. The company's lying. Everybody's lying, partly because the FISA requirements under which all this is happening require lying. And so that, if you fail to lie, then you are in violation. And so essentially what Google has been doing is petitioning the government to say, hey, we want to talk more about this. We want to be able to say some things that we are currently restricted from saying. Can we say that? And so far, they are not being given the green light to do that. But we really don't know exactly what's happening. We do know that the NSA is a spy agency, so everything about them is secret. The budget is secret. Their actions are secret. Their mission is secret. What they've done in the past is secret. And they'll reveal as little as possible. But it's great that this is all out there, because this stuff has been going on for a long time, and it's a problem that needs to be brought to the surface and beat to death by public conversation.
All right, good stuff, Mike. What about you, Craig? What's your view on that story?
Well, I certainly agree with the last point. It's an issue that should continue to be talked about until it's resolved, if at all possible. I think that it's no surprise that the laws haven't caught up with technology. Above all, I think the average citizen or company deserves a certain amount of protection, and that should be clear. At the same time, you know, where there is a legitimate requirement to an appropriate for, you know, law enforcement to do some eavesdropping, there should be kind of a process where a court order is required, which is the case for what was traditional kind of bugging or tracing or following someone. And I'm sure maybe there's some elements. I'm not as close to the issues in North America and the NSA, so I can't kind of comment on that. But at the same time, if there is wrongdoing and industrial espionage and the like, then there should be really strong and appropriate recriminations for everybody for that. So, you know, very generic, and sorry I'm not as close to the issue, but, you know, I'm sure everyone kind of feels pretty passionate about it.
Yeah, definitely. All right, Jacob. Steve, what's your view on that?
Oh, I've kind of talked about it a little bit before. Another thing I think, just skip my mind now, is... I just lost it. I was thinking about it earlier, but no, okay. I'm good.
Okay, all right. Jacob, next story.
Yes, we got one. Mulroy gives up on Zoom brand long after the world gave up on Honeycomb tablets. It's also because another company owns that name, Zoom.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Mark, what do you think?
Well, it's over anyway, because you know, that brand is kind of like dead anyway. So Motorola's moved on. They've canceled most of their products. Now they've just got the Droid line and the Moto X line, and they're probably going to get rid of the Droid line at some point, all of which is a good thing. And I think, you know, they're basically going to become – they're probably going to replace the Nexus. Nexus tablets currently made by Samsung and phones by – what is it? Sometimes LG, sometimes another company, Asus. But I think in the future, all of Google's phones will be Motorola phones, and all of the tablets will be Motorola tablets, and they won't be branded like this. They'll all be branded with either Nexus or Moto X or something like that. So who needs it?
Yep. And what phone are you using at the moment, Mark?
Well, I'm currently intending to buy a Moto X. I still have an iPhone. I had an iPhone 5, got stolen in Spain, so I sort of, knowing that I was going to move to an Android phone, I have been using my old 4S, so I still use an iPhone 4S, but I'm going to be moving to a Moto X as soon as I possibly can. I want one with the wooden back.
Oh, yeah, they're nice.
But I just learned that they're going to probably not come out for a few more weeks, and they're probably going to cost an extra $50, which I don't care that much about, but I'm going to be moving to a Moto X with a wooden back as soon as I can.
Nice one. Jody, what's your view on that about Mark moving to an Android phone?
You know, I'm an Apple fangirl. I'm waiting for, was it September 10th?
Yep.
When they make the big announcement. You know, I think the Moto X is kind of a cool concept. Some people, I think David Amerlin had a really good article that he put out there where he feels like it's the wave of the future. You know, this idea of personalizing your device. But I still really like the Apple platform.
The fact that it is customizable is not what makes it about the future. In the future, you'll talk, and the computer will talk back to you, and that's how pretty much most of our interaction with all computers will be, and that's what makes the Moto X about the future.
Okay.
All right. Good answer. What about you, Craig? What's your view on that story, and what phone do you use?
I've got an iPhone 5 for the time being, and I'm looking to get a Samsung. Look, I was an Apple fan, and I'm more and more becoming device agnostic these days. I don't like to be locked in any one place, so I'm kind of more interested in an operating system that's that allows us to play content everywhere. That's
exactly.
That's my interest. I've got Kindles, iPads, Samsung tablets, and deliberately play around with them all to kind of keep up the speed.
I love the Samsung S4. It's a nice phone. What about you, Steve?
I'm kind of interested with that Google Now or whatever.
Yeah, Google Now, yes, that's good.
The voicing system. I know Google's with their integrated search. You know, you can speak what it is. It finds it really fast. It seems to work really well. So
they've
been doing some very interesting development in that area.
You reckon you ever moved to an Android phone, Steve?
It's just simply because I like the way I can do through the iCloud, my scheduling, especially my scheduling, I can keep track of so much things, my notes and stuff, and sync it between all my devices. I'm happy where I'm at right now. Not saying I wouldn't use it in the future. Of course, I think with Google Maps, you can kind of do something very similar, I believe, too.
Okay. All right, Jacob, what do you reckon?
Nothing really. My brother had one of those Zoom tablets.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was buggy as crap.
All right, let's move on to the next story.
Okay, the banks of tomorrow. Think Google and Facebook? That's one of the stories.
Okay, Jody, you have a view?
Definitely.
Definitely. I agree with what Craig said. Jody, you have a view on that story?
You know, more and more, I think, we're moving towards this idea of currency. I'm not sure how comfortable, you know, being online, I'm not sure how comfortable I am with the concept of an organization like a Facebook having the opportunity to be a bank. There's this movement also with Bitcoin, and I know there's been a lot of controversy about it. And Mike, feel free to jump in because I know you probably have some thoughts about it as well. But I
do
don't
indeed,
know.
Yeah.
Go for it.
It's tied into identity, and I think that I don't see Facebook going anywhere with this, but because nobody trusts Facebook. But companies like Google and Apple, I think, are going to be huge replacements for banks because, and also Amazon. Because they'll figure out identity. I think, you know, Apple bought Authentic, which was the leading biometric, you know, fingerprint sensor company. They're going to be building fingerprint sensors into their devices. Probably the iWatch, probably or possibly the future iPhone. This may not happen until next year, but it may happen this year. And once you have fingerprint authenticated phones or wristwatches, then you can do anything with banking. You know, think about what we do right now with credit cards. They're so insecure. We go to a restaurant, and in the United States at least, a lion's share of there's a lot of illegal immigration in the United States. Something like, I think there are currently like 11 million people in the United States who are there illegally. And a lot of the identity theft that happens in the U.S. is to sort of authenticate illegal immigrants. And many, many illegal immigrants tend to gravitate towards certain professions. One of them is in restaurants. So in a lot of restaurants in the U.S., there are a lot of illegal immigrants working in the kitchen somewhere. That's where your credit card goes. when you go to a restaurant and you hand over a credit card, they take it from you, bring it to the back room where there are illegal immigrants or people who know illegal immigrants, and a lot of identity theft happens that way. The other thing that we do that's crazy with our credit cards is we go online and we go to some site and we enter in the secret code and all the numbers and the date and everything, and sort of we just throw it out there online, or we, some people even email the numbers around and stuff like that. Some of the stuff is password protected. All of that is going to be way more secure when we use biometrics. And so imagine a scenario. So one of the cool things about the Moto X is that it you just bypass the passcode. So if you have you tell it's when you're in the presence of these different Bluetooth devices, my keyboard, my headset, my whatever it is, don't give me a passcode. You just authenticate it straight in, right? So I think Apple is going to go one step further, and they're going to have a fingerprint wristwatch. When the phone is near the wristwatch, then the phone is authenticated. When the wristwatch is near the computer is authenticated. Easy pass right through. Every password that you would ever... It's like, I think they're going to have a system that's like LastPass, but authenticated with a wristwatch. And once you have that authentication, once you have that ID, then all banking is way better with a biometric authentication. You don't need banks anymore. Like, and Apple already has your credit card. Google might have your credit card, and Amazon definitely has your credit
card. Well, Google has your credit card. They've got the Google Buy, you know.
Well, they do, but most people don't use that. They'd like to get a lot more credit cards. they're not like Apple and Amazon, which, you know, if you're an Apple customer, they have your credit card. And if you've ever bought anything from Amazon, they have your credit card. Whereas lots of Google users have never given Google their credit card, but they'll get it. I mean, they'll get it. And the leading ID system right now is Google. The biggest prospect for real authentication online, real ID, is Google Plus. They're already sort of half-assedly setting up some system where they can like affirm your ID through that. So I don't think we tend to think of banks as being these big, complicated. You know, they're not. They throw numbers around. Most of the heft behind banks is regulatory, but really for debit type stuff, you don't really. I don't think there's any question that Apple, Google, and probably Amazon are going to be leading banking replacers. Facebook, not so much.
Well, you know, interestingly enough, Mike, you know, you were talking about having your credit card information stolen. Recently, I was visiting with my mom, and she gave me this. You probably are familiar with this. It's like a case that you put your credit cards in so that people can't scan them, because evidently, even somebody sitting near you can access the information from your credit card if it's not protected.
Yeah, if it has NFC or an RFID, then they can do that. And they actually have special wallets and stuff like that that have metal fiber in it that blocks shields. There are backpacks also that have pockets that are shielded like that. Your average credit card, though, is pretty hard to scan like that. But, you know, that's a possibility.
Interesting.
I think for the everyday purchases, I mean, yeah, I could see online banking going all the way. There's certain services, it's not going to really get rid of banks totally. I think we're still going to need them. It may reduce the amount we have now, like locally. You might have to go to a regional bank. But you still have things like loans and where you might, because people are probably still wanting to see, you know, they actually like going to see a person face-to-face instead of necessarily calling them on the phone or something like that. But I do see banking more toward being online, because that's kind of why I do it now. Because my bank actually shut down my regional one and actually moved to the next city. So now I either got to go there or do it online. So.
You know, Bank of America recently introduced a new service. It's an app that you put on your phone, and when you get a check, you just take a picture of the check. You don't even have to go to the bank. They will deposit the check in your checking account just from a picture of it. I tried it. It works.
Yeah, there's a few that utilize that. Navy Federal does, and Wells Fargo, I think, does it too.
Hmm. Good stuff. All right, Craig, do you have a view on that story at all?
Yeah, look, I think I personally can't foresee those organizations getting into retail banking on the high street. But that said, in terms of getting in between retailers and consumers and acting as a pay service provider, there is money for jam in that. And I would point out that eBay through PayPal have already done a brilliantly successful job of getting a disproportionate share of retail sales online when you use a PayPal account. And so for online merchants like ourselves, literally anywhere from 2 to 5% goes to one of these pay service providers. And so I am sure that the likes of Google are eyeing off, you know, imagine being able to take a couple of percent off every online transaction in the world. That's the kind of banking they'll aim at. And PayPal launched a product in the UK called Carrier Payments, where you can use your PayPal account, but for example, charge something to your mobile pay. It could be O2 or Virgin Mobile or something like that. So I think that there's absolute greenfield space for those tech companies to get into that kind of merchant facilities, and there is big money in it. But I don't see them opening a high street branch and offering home loans.
All right, Jacob, next story.
Yes, we go. Here we go. This virus creates fake followers on Instagram.
So what does it do? It gives you fake followers?
Yeah, Yeah, it infects your Instagram and gives you fake followers and stuff like that.
Hmm. Jody, do you know anything about this?
You know, interestingly enough, the other day, I think it was Chris Voss was talking about his Instagram being hacked, and several people were talking about it. But apparently, this has to do with not just hacking, but a virus that creates fake followers, which is kind of interesting. And, you know, everybody, I think, you can't really help it. Everybody probably has fake followers on social media accounts. You know, like on Twitter, for example, there's this wave of fake accounts that follow you in the hope that you'll follow back, and then they unfollow. It's almost like a wave of them that comes through from time to time. Well, this virus is kind of similar to the ones that they use to steal credit card information. And basically, what it does is it generates fake followers. And although I don't have any idea why somebody would want to do that.
Exactly, I don't know.
It could be marketing reasons. I mean, if you can get a lot of people following you on Instagram, if you're like selling a big product or something like that, you know, or it could be several reasons.
Well, maybe
I got the feeling in it. It's hard to really tell from the stories that I've read on this, but I think what the virus part of it does is it makes you a fake follower. So if you're infected with this, then suddenly you're following somebody you never intended to follow. I could be mistaken about that, though.
Oh, that's weird. Well, wouldn't that show up then in your stream of people that you're following?
Yeah, definitely.
Huh.
Yeah, who's that?
But people, you know, who knows? Who knows? You have 4,000 followers on Twitter. Who knows? Or Instagram or whatever it is. Who knows if you really intended to follow some of these people?
Mm. Isn't that crazy? Wow.
Yep, very crazy. All right, Steve, what do you think?
Yeah, of course, what I mentioned about marketing. Of course, this concept is really not new. Of course, I guess they're calling this a virus. I know there's other things along those lines. Like on YouTube, they use bots to do this. They even make it a marketing thing where they can supposedly you can pay this company and they have a bunch of these followers add you and sub for sub, and there's a lot of other things along those lines.
Yeah.
Then you look incredibly popular.
But it's all fake. Yeah. Though, it's all fake.
Yeah, it's fake.
Of course it is. Fake.
Yeah. Craig, what do you reckon?
Yeah, look, I've seen these kind of to the last point, this click farming kind of things where literally you can go buy 10,000 Facebook likes for your brand and get them overnight for very little money, because there's probably people sitting in apartments kind of working from home on their PC. And, you know, for brands who think that's a good idea initially to build their status, it's kind of will have the opposite effect, because I think consumers will look out for brands that aren't kind of real and genuine. So it's not something that we've entertained. And let's be honest, even if you've got legitimate followers, it's kind of passive activism, right? Activism. You really want people who genuinely want to engage, irrespective if they've come from a virus, a click farm, or just hit like or follow or whatever. So, you know, certainly the virus and these issues are a problem. And I think brands should be careful of partaking in click farming as well. Consumers will eventually sniff out any falseness in brands.
Definitely. All right, Jacob, last story.
We got one more after this one.
Oh, one more. Okay, yep. Righto.
Garmin takes on the GoPro with the Verb waterproof action camera.
All right, Mark, you seen this, mate?
I have. A few problems with this as a competitor to the GoPro. One of them is that it's not significantly better in specs than the GoPro. I think if you're going to compete with an established leader with a brand new product, you need to be significantly better in order to get some traction against them. The second thing is that it's Garmin. GoPro is getting a lot of traction with extreme sports fans and people on extreme sport fan wannabe types. It's got a certain amount of street cred, whereas Garmin is kind of an old school stuffy. They're trying hard to be relevant, but they're kind of like yesterday's technology company. They really love proprietary technology, their wireless technology that connects the camera with other Garmin stuff. Well, who's going to have other Garmin stuff? I mean, come on. How many people are really walking around with Garmin wristwatches and stuff like that? I mean, people do have them, but it's like, you know, come on. This product is not going to do super well. What they should have done is been un-Garmin-like, and that is they should have had a higher definition camera, better optics, and better electronics than the GoPro, and they should have embraced open standards for wireless connectivity and other things and supported other devices, but they didn't, so I don't think they're going to succeed.
Okay. Craig?
Yeah, I'm not probably the target here. I bought a GoPro in January, and I happened to be in Aspen, and I filmed a run, like a 15-minute run. I played it back that night and was so bored I never used it again, and no one would be that interested in seeing any video. I wish I could get my $400 back, so I'm not the person to ask.
Maybe you should sell it on eBay.
Yeah, it wouldn't sell.
Okay. All right, Jody?
I'm going to respectfully disagree with Mike, and the reason is because I have a Garmin.
You don't have to be respectful.
Okay. I will just respectfully disagree. Well, here's the thing. I have a Garmin, the Zumo, which is the motorcycle version of the Garmin. And what I like about it is when I'm out on the road, you can integrate with different places, like different. I think I've got Roadside America, which is like these weird out of the way kind of places to go see. So you're riding along and suddenly it dings on your screen and says, hey, there's this weird out of the way place, you need to go see it, you know, that like the world's largest fry pan, or you know, like a statue from some horror movie that's sitting on the side of the road. So I do use my Garmin all the time when I'm on the bike. And I've contemplated getting a GoPro because, you know, Craig, I guess like you, I kind of dream of this, like everybody wants to see these videos of what the road looks like from my motorcycle. But it's probably boring to anybody but me. But what I like about having it integrate would be the ability to record and also geotarget or geotrack where it is. And I like the size of it from what it looks like. It looks like it's kind of like small and kind of cylindrical. You obviously don't want something that's huge. I don't know. I think it has a place, and I think that there's a possibility that that it may take off. And there's a lot of people in the forums that love Garmin, love the ability to swap different routes. And maybe it's a motorcycle thing. I don't know. But, you know, Garmin to me does not seem stodgy. It seems very respectable, and it seems reliable. And you know, GoPro to me is kind of trendy and you know, flash in the pan. So I don't know. I think it's a good move for Garmin.
Good answer, Steve.
Oh, now did you talk about it? I do have a GoPro myself.
Oh, you do have one. Right here. nice.
Now, I think it's good to have competition. I mean, there's several alternatives to the GoPro which are directly trying to compete against them, which is fine. It gives people alternatives. Maybe not necessarily as good. Perhaps they got cheaper pricing. I don't know. But, you know, I just go out and compare all the different ones and see which one's the best for you. That's all I can say.
Yep. All right, Jacob. Next story.
The last one?
Yep.
Wait, before we go to the next story, I have a quick aside. Jody, what was the name of the app you talked about that gives you information about what's around you?
Oh, the weird stuff? It's called Roadside America.
Right, that's right. This is a quick aside, but Roadside America is one of the sources of content for Field Trip, which is an app that Google makes that pops up all kinds of different.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. Yeah, so the cool news for is that Field Trip, we learned this week, was actually made for Google Glass. That's what its intended purpose was originally, but Glass wasn't ready, so they came out with Android and iOS apps. But now the Google Glass app is actually in existence. So Field Trip, including Roadside America content, is now a Glassware app. And so this is where we're going. This is where we're going with this stuff. So as a motorcycle enthusiast, you know, Glass is going to be something that isn't going to be just a product. It's going to be a whole platform, a whole range of services. And you know it's going to be built into motorcycle helmets
with
a heads-up display. So you know, 2 years from now, or who knows when, that sort of content is just going to pop up in your visor.
Well, and I think that Google did a smart thing buying Waze. And I think that is like the coolest app ever. It saved me so much time the other day. But I have Field Trip. Honestly, I like it and I don't like it. I like it because it shows a lot of historical information. It doesn't seem to be, like, Roadside America is weird. I mean, just strange oddities. And it doesn't seem like they're, and maybe I haven't used my Field Trip recently since that's happened, but Field Trip to me is more like, you know, historical markers and, you know, George Washington.
Yeah, it doesn't work super well right now either. It's not a super, but you can see where it's going and I'm sure they'll keep tweaking it till it works really well. And, you know, the idea is the right one.
Good stuff.
All right, Jacob, next story, mate.
This story came from our own Steve Klingon.
Okay.
Steve Ballmer to retire from Microsoft.
Wow. That's new news to me. Steve, tell us about it.
Yeah, it just came out this morning. I found out, I had to rush it just so I could do it on my show. He's planning on retiring within the year, depending if when they find a replacement CEO. They got a board, special board that they got up trying to find a replacement for him. I don't know. I was really unpopular with Steve Ballmer the last 5 or 6 years. And I was actually talking in the chat room earlier about it. And there's a few other people that was a little negative about it too. Now, of course, in the enterprise business world, I think he did well enough. On the consumer side, there's been a lot of problems. So hopefully they're going to hire a new CEO outside the company to bring fresh blood in, to bring in new ideas for the consumers.
All right. Mike, do you have a view on that story?
Yeah, I've been calling for Steve Ballmer to resign for about 6 years or something like that. He's pretty incompetent, and he's been in place only because he was Bill Gates' friend. That's the only way he could survive the massive loss of valuation. The market capitalization of Microsoft peaked about a month before he took office or something like that. And since then, the amount of value that they've lost is, I don't have it offhand, but it's dozens of billions of dollars in valuation. And, you know, CEOs don't survive that kind of thing. And it's just, this is way, way overdue. And I'm sure he's being forced out. I'm sure that it just got so ridiculous that they had to say, okay, you have to exit here. And Wall Street responded with a huge spike in Microsoft stock on the news that he was leaving. So much so that, in fact, Ballmer himself, from his own ownership of his own Microsoft stock, his value went up by $750 million by 7 o'clock in the morning, Washington time.
Yeah, it went up
by 8% at the same time. Sorry.
All right, Craig, do you have a view on that story?
I don't think I feel as passionate about the others. You know, all businesses and industries go through cycles, and you know, I don't think anyone at the top of Microsoft would have halted the growth of Apple, and that overshadowed them. And no doubt, there was more that could have been done. But you know, I think I'm sure the guy held on for more reasons than his personal friendship with Bill Gates. I'm sure that over the history of not only his leadership, but his career at Microsoft before that, that he'll be revered in the fullness of time.
All right, Jacob.
Well, they might get rid of Windows 8.
Well, you mean you have to move to the Mac, Jacob?
No, what I'm saying is they might get rid of the Metro and go. When they make Windows 9, they'll probably go back to default.
Yep.
Well, they're making an update 8.1. I don't know if it's been released yet.
Mm. Also, Jacob, you actually forgot to put this in the show notes. Jody was actually on the Tech Buzz the other day. I can't believe you actually forgot that. I didn't forget.
The chat room mentioned it.
Yes, that's why I want to bring that up. Jody, you're on the Tech Buzz. Tell us about it.
Oh, I had a great time with Slick and Steve. And in fact, Slick little known fact, was a tech for Microsoft.
Yeah.
And he didn't actually share that with me until after they asked me what I thought about Windows 8. And I think that my quote was something along the lines, like, Windows 8 is why I switched to Mac.
I'm not a fan of Windows. I hate Windows.
I actually had already switched to Mac before Windows 8, but it made for a good show.
Yep. Interesting.
Good stuff. All right, yeah. Jacob, any questions for Jodie about the tech bars when she was on there at all or not?
No, but I liked all the questions that were being asked.
So did I.
Yep, we had a good discussion.
So, Mark, do you know much about the tech bars, Mark? Have you heard that show before?
I've heard of it.
Okay, good stuff. All right,
he's got a Steve has a great little studio going there, and he's doing a lot of television. It's a mini television station that he's creating, all internet TV, which is amazing. Good for him.
Yeah, good on him. I say yes. I agree. All right, Jacob, who's the guest we have on today, mate?
We got Craig White
from
Easy Flicks TV.
Good stuff. Welcome, Craig.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Good stuff. Tell us about Easy Flicks.
So we launched EasyFlicks.tv this week as a kind of place where you can get video on demand and, most interestingly, download to own of kind of new release feature film content and episodic TV. And although that probably doesn't sound completely new in the United States, for example, only iTunes has that offer in Australia, but if you're an iTunes customer, good luck playing back your content on a Samsung device that we were talking about earlier. So actually we're the first of our kind to be able to offer that service where we are device and platform agnostic. There's a lot of nuances between the Australian market and the US as far as free-to-air and cable and different things, and I can certainly go into that in greater detail if you like. But,
go ahead.
Sorry, go on. You had a question, Brad?
Yeah, go ahead. Tell us more about it. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, well, look, you know, I think the first really interesting thing about Australia versus, say, the US is we've got like only 30% of households have cable TV versus the US is around 75%.
Yep.
And one of the reasons for that is that there was the government passed a law many years ago that say that sport can't be siphoned from free-to-air networks over to pay TV, unlike the NFL or even the Premier League was in the UK many, many years ago. And so a lot of people kind of stick and are comfortable with their free-to-air TV. And ironically, of those 30% of households that do have pay TV, half the time they're actually watching free-to-air networks. So subscription services aren't huge in Australia. We don't have a Hulu as such, and Hulu was an experiment between kind of Fox, Disney, and Universal at the time, some time ago. We don't have those aggregated catch-up services in Australia. So really, you know, it's a new service that Australians are not used to, and we're not locking anyone into any one device, which Apple will try and do. We're launching in New Zealand in a couple of weeks, and, for example, not even iTunes sells episodes of TV shows in the New Zealand market of some, you know, 4.5 million people. So, you know, we're pretty enthusiastic. It's early days. We call it day one in what will be a kind of 10-year journey in the Australian and New Zealand market. Mm-hmm. We do know that people love to own movies and TV shows that they have either seen first at the cinema, and they do want to own them, and hence why there's a, in Australia, there's $1 billion market for DVDs and Blu-ray discs still today, and that number's closer to $15 billion in the United States. So people do want to own movies they love, and there's not many services that allow them to download and own and play back offline and do so across all devices, and so we're pleased to be able to be the first to offer that service in Australia and New Zealand.
What's your view on QuickFlix, Craig?
So QuickFlix is a subscription service, and again, I think Australians are really sceptical to subscription services.
Yeah.
You know, the cost of entry in the US, Netflix at $8 a month and, you know, thousands and thousands of titles, it's that kind of $8 entry point, QuickFlix customers forgive them for not having new release content, right? Mm. It's hard to find something latest and greatest in terms of feature films on QuickFlix, but at $2 a week, who cares? Whereas when those subscription fees are twice or more that amount in Australia and still you don't get those new release films and or the range that's available on services like QuickFlix is about 400 titles. So that doesn't endear folks to kind of want to hang around for a long time. So I'm personally not a fan of subscription services. I think it's too early in the Australian market. And I don't liken our service to QuickFlix. I'd liken it more to iTunes, where you get a choice of both pay-per-view, video on demand, and or download to own. That's our nearest competitor in terms of like business model.
Okay. Steve, any questions for Craig?
Actually, yes. So it's basically all download and not streaming?
No, we do have streaming. So we do video on demand, which you'd stream from our web, straight from the website, or download to own, for which we'll have player apps that you can download to PC, Mac, and your Android or iOS devices as well.
And, okay, so would that use – now, I checked your website. It uses ultraviolet. Is that what you use for the download method or –
Okay, so ultraviolet is a kind of added service again, and I'm not sure how much you've spoken to your listeners before about ultraviolet. It's a kind of a system, if you like. A consortium of studios got together and said, how do we put more value behind people buying a DVD and or introduce them to digital consumption? And so when you buy a DVD or Blu-ray with a ultraviolet logo on it, it means that the consumers get the digital file as a gift with purchase. And so we're both acting as a redemption portal for those people who will buy physical media. And at the same time, if you want to buy just the digital file, we'll also add that to your ultraviolet locker. And what that actually means is consumers can actually add up to five other people to their ultraviolet locker and share their collection. So actually, ultraviolet offers the best value way to own and share legitimate content, which is fantastic.
Good stuff. Jody, any questions?
Yeah, Craig, do you have any plans to do original content? Like Netflix offered the Arrested Development stuff and House of Cards and Orange is the New Black. Any plans for that kind of stuff?
Yeah, I it's way too premature to give a definitive answer. I mean, I'm off to the American film market later this year, and certainly would be on the lookout for buying kind of territory rights to certain licenses, mostly probably feature film, and that's eminently possible. And there's a lot of distributors that go over and do those kind of things, but I would have to say there are no plans at this point in time to do something to the scale of House of Cards or Arrested Development. They're both great shows, by the way. I haven't seen season four of Arrested, but House of Cards is brilliant. Yeah, that's not in our first couple of horizons of thinking, but it's possible to pick up feature films. Yeah,
yeah, and I appreciate that because you're just starting. I mean, you started this week, but I guess it's curious to me because it seems like that's the new model for the online streaming business, almost to offer content that you can't get anywhere else. And do you have a take on whether you think that's a smart strategy or even a doable strategy for a startup?
Well, for a startup, no, unless you want to borrow a lot of other people's money. For Netflix, absolutely. And whilst we think it's new, actually, if you kind of go back and think about HBO, it's not so new. HBO started as a aggregator of everyone else's content and then themselves got into their own productions and original programming. So it's not such a new concept. In fact, even the film distributors themselves, from Paramount, Warner, Disney, through to Fox, each of them will produce some of their own content, and then they too will go to Cannes or to Sundance and buy films to distribute. So ultimately, whether a film is or a TV show is actually finished and in the can, or at script or pre-production stage, film studios can go and buy content from other producers, and so too people with the scale of like Netflix or Amazon. It makes sense for them to play into that. It is what's driven, I guess, cable channels, even like AMC, buying Breaking Bad as an example again. So it's not a new model, it's just new to the over-the-top delivery. And Netflix, great challenge, as I mentioned before, is on one hand they've got a lot of subscribers, they keep the price low, that doesn't give them the wherewithal to go and buy new release content from all the studios. And so one way to circumvent that is to go to a production house and co-produce themselves. So it makes eminent sense, and I think we'll see a lot more of it for the big players and for us startups in a couple of years maybe.
All right.
Thank you.
Good question, Jody. Jacob, any questions for Craig?
Well, what I was going to ask was, is your service anything different than what we get in the U.S. traditionally?
I would say that I would liken it to, the short answer is no, it's not. Today, for example, Voodoo would be our nearest model wearing, because Voodoo obviously offers video on demand, it offers download to own, it offers ultraviolet, and it is device and platform agnostic. So we're most like a Voodoo in that respect. But Australia is still playing catch up with the US, and so it's the right time to be entering the Australian market. But we acknowledge that, we wouldn't have a significant point of difference yet in the United States, but at the same time, we're not looking to go to that market. We'll look at markets in Asia and in Europe and certainly New Zealand in the next couple of weeks.
Good stuff, Craig. Mike, any questions?
Yeah, I had one more.
Hang on. Mike, got a question?
Just a quick one. I'm just curious what you see as the time frame for the acceptance and availability of 4K programming in Australia.
Oh, that's an awesome question, and I don't know that I'm most qualified to answer. I know that when I've had chats to the executives at consumer electronics companies, they're for the last couple of years, they're replacement cycles of the current big screens have really slowed, I think, a lot less than they'd expected. And so for anyone who went and bought a nice big screen, are they ready to run out and go and replace with a 4K? And I think it's a chicken and egg game around the install base versus the programming. And we don't have a lot of high-definition programming being kind of broadcast on even free-to-air or on pay services. So I think that we will be well behind the US as far as programming and production of content goes. I wouldn't even like to hazard a guess about, what the install base is for 4K screens. I could probably count it on one hand today in Australia.
Yeah, definitely. I actually checked out a 4K TV from Sam. Really nice TV. Big screen and, good. Go ahead, Steve.
Oh, I was just going to mention about 4K. I don't know if even the American TV is even going to 4K programming per se. I know like in the UK, it's starting to get a foothold with the BBC going shortly, I guess, to 4K. And maybe I think I heard Japan as well. As far as American, I'm not sure if they're ready for it yet. But.
So, Craig, have you seen the new Foxtel Play at all?
I'm familiar with it from afar, but I haven't played with it yet. It's a different offer to what we offer.
It is, yes.
Sorry, go on, Brad.
Yeah, I just said yeah, it is. It's a great service. Have you used it yet? You haven't, have you?
No, I've played around with the Foxtel Go around the Olympics, mm-hmm. And I think what separates, for example, what we do to what they do. I mean, they're offering a plethora of choices, but you still got to pay the equivalent of a subscription or a monthly fee in your $25 a month. And then if you want, to watch a feature film or a particular episode of something that might not be in that channel set, you've either got to up your subscription by two or threefold or pay incrementally.
Yeah.
And I think that maybe for the affluent few households that have Foxtel might like to add another $25 or more bucks a month and grab that service on the go. It's not what we do. We are a straight, you can come once, be casually engaged. There's no contract, no monthly fees, no subscription of any kind. Just either rent a movie for $6 or own it for $25. And straight up, that's the extent of it. So
is that $25? Is that on every TV show or movie for $25, or does it range in price?
No, well, it ranges in price. So a new release movie would be $25, which would be on par with iTunes here in Australia.
Okay.
To buy an episode of TV, at a single episode would be $2.99. At the same time, if you went and bought the entire season one, for example, of Breaking Bad, it's $15 today. So the whole season price comes down in line with how the lifetime value of this content would shift over time, even in the physical media market. So we're price parity to iTunes in almost every instance. But what we don't do is charge a subscription to access the service on top of that, which is what the likes of Fox Play and or QuickFlix do.
What about AirPlay and your content from the iPad to an Apple TV?
Mm. I'd love it if Apple would allow other applications to use AirPlay.
Hey, I love it. I wish AirPlay would be good. I've been using Chromecast as well. That's not bad to use too.
Yeah, so you know, certainly, obviously, when you're watching iTunes content and with AirPlay function to your TV, that's awesome. But you'll have a hard time getting that through the app development process if you add AirPlay to your app. So, not yet, but we'll keep persisting.
What about coming to? Will it be coming onto any PVRs anytime soon?
So we've had a couple of approaches. Our kind of the next, in terms of meaningful installed bases, Samsung Smart TV is kind of on the roadmap, and we look forward to making some more formal announcements in the coming weeks about that. As far as other CE devices go, then again, the install base doesn't necessarily make the development pathway commercial right away. So there's a bit of a wait and see. Games consoles and Samsung are the first focus for us.
Okay.
And probably Roku for the UK market.
When will it be on the Xbox, do you know?
Those discussions are ongoing, and look forward to some positive news very, very soon about that.
Good stuff. I can't wait. Yeah, if it's on the Xbox, I'll use it for sure, because I like watching stuff on the big screen and stuff, and, you know, movies and that.
What about
HD content and stuff? Will you be doing any HD stuff?
Yes, so we do. We do both rent and sell download to own HD content where the studio has that file provision for that purpose. And so, and in every instance, wherever we can get it, we will offer both standard and high definition.
Sweet, good stuff. And the newer TV shows like Breaking Bad, you have that them sort of shows, Breaking Bad.
Right. So certainly. The back seasons of Breaking Bad season 1 to 5, yes. And, well, I'm actually pleased to share with you guys that we're at a handshake stage with Sony that we'll soon be offering Breaking Bad season 6. I think we're about a week or two behind. But I'll just touch on this one point. Breaking Bad, for example, plays on Foxtel's Showcase channel.
Yep.
It probably attracts maybe 100,000 viewers a day. Can't speak specifically to that program. But 12 hours after Breaking Bad's first ep of the final season launched in the US, there was 80,000 illegal downloads in Australia. And so that speaks volumes about the availability of digital content and legitimate services. So we look forward to being able to offer the final season of Breaking Bad very, very soon on our service.
Nice. So do you have Foxtel yourself, Craig, or...?
I do, yeah. I try and experiment with everybody because it's important to keep an eye on what people do. I'm certainly not the... I'm not the... the guy that's got the $180 a month package or whatever the extreme version is, because I'm not sort of for the sports part, but I do like to keep an eye on it, and I certainly use it for the new services at times of day that better suit me.
Yeah, definitely. Try and check out the Foxtel Play. I got Foxtel Play on my Xbox, and it works great. I love the on the iPad.
Right, I certainly will.
Apart from that, but I don't have a box installed. I reckon it's a rip-off.
Right, well, we'll get working on the Xbox for you, Brad.
Yeah, definitely get the Xbox, mate. Any more questions, Steve?
Oh, that was it.
Jody.
I appreciate your sharing this new service, and unfortunately in the US we won't be able to partake at least as of yet, but good luck with it. It sounds exciting.
Mm. Ah, thank you very much. I appreciate your time today too.
Yep. Craig, do you want to tell us anything else about Easy Flix TV?
No, other than that, you know, for everyone listening in Australia and certainly New Zealand as of next week, go give it a try. As I said, there's the fact that we do video on demand and download to own. We have literally thousands of titles available today, and, you know, you don't have to be locked into a contract, to a subscription, no monthly fees, and, you know, you can play on an Android or an iOS device, and, you know, that what makes us significantly different. So give it a try.
Definitely. All right, Mike, any final thoughts and questions to Craig at all?
Nope. Glad to hear, glad to see innovation anywhere we can get it, anywhere in the world around television, because it's sorely needed.
Definitely, I agree.
Thank you.
Yep, Jody?
Yeah, you mean me?
Jacob, sorry. Jake, go ahead. What do you want to say before we wrap up?
No, what I was wanting to say, like if you bought content off your site, but like someone's in the States, but like in Australia, and they want to come to the States with their stuff from Australia, would it still work over here?
So you can if you can't buy if you're in the US to originate your purchase, no, because we have to protect the content rights and the license fees that we've acquired. But if you bought the content in Australia, I think that was your question, and if you download it to your device, then yes, because we offer offline playback, you could certainly go to the US and reaccess that content. And what we're working through is your ability to stream while in the US, provided your account originated in Australia. But we've just got a little work to do with the DRM and the licensing rights with studios on that final piece.
Nice one. Mm-hmm. All right, Jody, final thoughts and your Twitter handle, that sort of good stuff. Where can we get you on Twitter?
You can find me on Twitter as Sunswept and most of the usual places as either Jody Rains or at my website, webmarcom.net. And soon, A2SM as well.
Oh, good stuff. That's a new podcast you do, isn't it?
Yeah, it's been a little bit quiet, but it looks like my two co-hosts are going to be coming back, and that's another long story we'll share.
Who are the two co-hosts you're going to have on?
Well, it was Neil Weiser and Seth Goldstein.
Okay.
And, yeah, one day we'll talk about it. So it looks we'll do show... Like 1 week with Seth and 1 week with Neil. That's what I'm shooting for now.
Good stuff. All right, Mark Elgin, final thoughts and Twitter and that sort of good stuff. We're going to get hold of you.
Well, I'm on Google Plus. I'm also on Twitter, but everything on Twitter is just an automated link to Google Plus posts.
Okay.
So search for Mike Elgin on Google Plus or my twitter.com/Mike Elgin.
Good stuff, and thanks for being on, Mark. Appreciate your time.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Craig. Where can I get
Brad, thanks for your time today. You can find me on easyflix.tv, please.
Yeah, definitely. Plug it again, mate. Plug it again.
You can find me on easyflix.tv. Please give it a go.
Yeah,
and you can live chat there if you need to.
Do it, do it. People in Australia, go check it out. Steve.
Yeah, did you say easyflix.tv?
That's, I'm just kidding.
That's correct.
That's the one.
Check it out.
Check it out.
You can find me on Twitter. It's chatterbox_live.
All right, and me, Brad Dolls on the Tech Webcast. Also, a shout-out to Zara, that she listens to the show every week, and, yeah, hope you enjoyed the show, Zara and Steve. Jacob?
I enjoyed being on the show.
Yep.
I'm sorry that Andrew was out today, but I picked up his his reins today.
He was out buying a wedding dress.
Oh, really? A pretty pink one.
For his mother.
Yeah. Jody, what's your final thoughts on the show?
You probably lost a bet.
Probably.
I hope I didn't lose the bet, but I was hoping to hear more from Mike Elgin because he has a tremendous perspective, global perspective. And Mike, just really appreciate your being on and all of your insights.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
So, Mike, what have you been up to for the past time, last time we spoke? Just a quick rundown before we go.
Well, I've been living in Florence for 3 or 4 weeks. I've got a few more weeks, about 3 more weeks here, and then we're back to the U.S. for a while, and then after that, we don't know where we're going to go, but we're going to keep living abroad because we love it.
Nice.
And and I'm just very, very busy writing columns as fast as I can.
Sweet, mate. Any plans coming to Australia?
Eventually, for sure, yeah. We're having trouble pulling ourselves away from Europe, and we definitely want to spend a lot of time in Africa. But we'll get there eventually.
Good stuff, because Robert Scoble came to Australia not long ago. He's going to come back in November to Melbourne. He loved it.
Yeah, I bet.
He did, yeah. Yep. All right, Jody, is that it?
I forgot to give my Twitter handle. Yeah.
Go ahead, Jake.
JazzBot32669 1Z.
All right, thanks for being on, guys. Appreciate it. Good show.
Thanks, Brad.
Thank you.
Hi, Glenn from Aussie Tech Heads. Join Will, Eric, and myself as we bring you the latest, most up-to-date, important tech news that affects you from Australia and the world. A weekly podcast available each Friday through iTunes. Watch the live stream recording of the show at live.thesecrethub.com each Thursday night, 7:30 p.m. or GMT plus 10. Call in live via Skype or chat in our lounge. However you get us, just make sure you do. Listen or visit our website for more information, www.aussietechhead.com.au. Aussie Tech Heads, Australia's longest running tech news podcast.
Well, that's it for Tech Webcast this week. Thank you for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed having your mind expanded. Tune in next week for more tech talk with Brad, Jason, and whatever crazy guests they've managed to rope in. Don't forget to get the Tech Webcast app from iTunes. Follow us on Twitter at Tech Webcast, and of course, check us out on Facebook too. Until next time, may the tech be with you. Peace!